Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The lights are out.
Hurry, get some, the lights go out.
The game is over, and we're here to pick up the pieces. This is Warriors Wrap-Up on 95.7, The Game.
So the Pacers under coach Rick Carlisle will go to 21-18. They've won 12 of their last 16. The Warriors got a good effort tonight from their undermanned crew, but not enough to overcome a good Indiana squad. And so Golden State still with a chance to have a very successful win-chill road trip as they go to Toronto and then Minnesota to close it out and to try to build some momentum here as they head toward the halfway point of the season.
Yeah, they definitely do need some momentum. They're back to 500, 19-19 after the loss tonight. Final score, Pacers 108, Warriors 96. So a 12-point Pacers win in Indiana as they defend their home floor. This was not the normal full Warriors team. Of course, this Warriors team down their top four players, their top 5 minutes per game, guys. I mean, you're down Stephen Curry, you're down Draymond Green, you're down Andrew Wiggins, you're down Jonathan Kuminga, you're down Brandon Pajemski. You're also down Gary Payton II, and the Warriors fought throughout this game. I mean, this was a four-point game in the fourth quarter for a moment. A four-point game in the fourth quarter. Indiana, though, begins to make some shots more consistently in the second half, and specifically the final, like, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and they ride that hot shooting down the stretch to a win, 108-96. They led essentially wire to wire, but they never really pulled away. This was a game that was anywhere between 6 to 14 points for the majority of the night, and ultimately the final score falls within that range as well. So the Warriors, considering who was out there and considering who was sitting on the bench or considering who wasn't even with the team, Andrew Wiggins, you can't be that upset by what happened tonight. Now, there were some frustrating moments, no doubt about that, and we're going to talk about all that here on Warriors Wrap-Up on 95.7 The Game. It's Mark Randy with you. You can shoot me a text, give me a call, 888-957-9570. Again, that call, 888-957-9570. So again, the Warriors lose 108-96 is the final score. The Warriors now 19-19 on the year. They began the season 12-3. They're 7-16 since. 7-16 are the Warriors in their last 23 games. Only 7 wins in their last 23. This one, though, was pretty simple. I mean, the Warriors just could not get any offense going. You even look at who did score and who led the Warriors offensively. It was Buddy Hield and Pat Spencer. Pat Spencer, a career night, 17 points for the first time in his career. Double digits for the first time in his career. A made 3 for the first time in his career. 17 points, 7 of 12 from the field. He was efficient. He was solid in this game. The other Warriors leading scorer, Buddy Hield, who scored 17 points but on 19 shots. He got a lot of shots up because who else is going to shoot in this one without Steph, without Dre, without Wiggs, without Kuminga, without Pods, without GP2? You needed someone to put up some shots. Buddy Hield was not shy about that, but only 6 for 19 and 3 for 12 from downtown. I mean, we're not going to make any sweeping generalizations about the 2024-25 Warriors based on what happened tonight. But the one thing we can very clearly say, and I'm not so sure there's anyone out there that can disagree, the Warriors that trotted out there today simply just do not have enough offensive firepower. And that's nothing against this group. I mean, there's some exciting moments. We got to see Quentin Post play. Again, Pat Spencer had a really, really awesome game. He generally seems to find himself in the right spot. He cuts at the right time. He makes the right passes. Sometimes they're wayward, but he has the right thought. He understands the game. He's clearly a natural. His basketball instincts are very good. Guy Santos was solid again for another game. Wasn't nearly as impactful as he was last night, but Guy Santos scored 11 points on only 5 shots. He was efficient, made both the threes that he took, had 3 assists, had a couple of steals, had 3 rebounds, including one on the offensive side. So, and there are, you know, individual moments and performances to be encouraged by. Quentin Post made a 3, had an and one, drove with his left hand off a pump fake from up top, got towards the rim, missed the layup, but good to see him put the ball on the deck and get towards the rim. So some individual moments of promise and something to be excited about. But the bottom line is the Warriors did not have enough offense. And for a team that has struggled shooting the ball as much as they have, the Warriors, you feel like the adjustment would be to get to the rim, right? Like, all right, the threes aren't falling. Let's get to the rim, and let's do that relentlessly. One thing, this is a big thing, but it is one thing, the Warriors don't have a lot of ball handlers that can drive, which was why the acquisition of Dennis Schroeder, I think, was so important for this Warrior team. Now, he hasn't really panned out offensively yet, but there were still a handful of moments in this game where he was really the only Warrior that was able to get to the rim with any kind of consistency, and he had a couple of buckets right around the 10 down low, which, you know, considering the Warriors only scored 96 points and shot less than 42% from the field, they need those easy points whenever they can find them, and Dennis Schroeder is one of the ways the Warriors can find them with the roster that was available tonight. But no doubt, this is a Warriors team that just does not have enough offensive firepower, given who was out there today. But if the Warriors are really struggling shooting the ball, as they have been for like the last month and a half, the adjustment should be get to the rim, right? And it should be try to get to the free throw line. Well, for the Warriors, that's a problem because, again, they don't have a lot of guys that can get to the rim. And two, when they do get to the rim, I'm not so sure I have ever seen a team like the Warriors that are so unable to finish around the rim. It is absolutely ridiculous watching this team try to finish around the rim night after night after night. It's not just a fluke. It's not just a, this happens this game and, you know, maybe 2 weeks in the future it'll happen again. Like, this is nearly every single night. The Warriors leave so many points out there by just missing layups. And it's the same exact story at the free throw line. Again, this is not a team, and generally, scoring around the rim and free throws are there, you know, those two things are correlated. Like, there's a positive correlation between the number of points you have in the paint and the number of free throws you attempt, because usually you get fouled more so around the rim than you do from the outside. The Warriors are not a team that can get to the rim that often, and therefore they're not a team that can get to the free throw line that often. What makes it worse is when they get to the rim and when they get to the free throw line, they're one of the worst teams in the NBA at finishing those looks. They do not take the easy ones. They do not take advantage of the easy points that every other team in the NBA does. They do not finish around the rim well, and they do not finish at the free throw line well. And this is not just a tonight Warriors issue. This is a Warriors issue when you're fully healthy, when you have Steph, and when you have Draymond, and when you have Wiggins, and when you have Kuminga, and when you have Pods, and when you have GP2. This is an issue all year, and it has been all year. The Warriors do not finish around the rim, and they do not. They also do not finish at the free throw line. And if you just were to say the Warriors would be league average at the rim and league average at the free throw line, I guarantee you they would have like 4 more wins this year. Instead of being 19-19, they'd be something like 23-15. That's how big of a difference those moments can make for the Warriors. And it could have been the difference tonight. I mean, you look at the shot chart for the Warriors, and I have it in front of me. I'll try to show it to the YouTube crowd here in just a second, and you can join us on YouTube, youtube.com/957thegame. It's ugly. There's a lot of red X's down around the rim. Let me try to hold this up to you on YouTube, and you can see this just generally. The Warriors obviously making a decent chunk of their shots down around the rim, but that's what generally happens when you get down there. But there's so many red X's. The Warriors in the paint for this entire game, 23 for 43. And you might look at that and say, well, that's upwards of 50%. That's pretty good. That's decent for, like, jump shots. Like, if you're upwards of 50% on jump shots in the mid-range, you'll take that. Obviously, you'll take upwards of 50% from downtown. But inside the paint, oh, you need to be a lot better than that. At least, like, 65%. You would love to be around there. And even when you get closer to the rim, the Warriors are well below league average at that as well. And tonight was just another example. The number of points that Trayce Jackson-Davis leaves out there at the rim is really, really frustrating. Same thing happens for Kyle Anderson down low, Kevon Looney at times. This is a team-wide issue, and tonight it was the same thing. I mean, Buddy Hield missed a lot of layups tonight as well. I mean, he had 19 field goal attempts, and he scored 17 points. I'm not knocking Buddy's shot selection tonight because, again, somebody had to take those shots in the absence of everybody else. But, man, you got to get a little more proficient around the rim. Otherwise, you're going to keep losing a lot of these basketball games because your three-point shot, as we've seen for a month and a half now, is not going to consistently fall. And if that doesn't happen, you need to be able to take advantage and get easy points elsewhere, and the Warriors have not been doing that basically all season long. All right, it's Warriors wrap-up here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy with you as the Dubs fall to the Pacers in Indiana against the Pacers 108-96. Out to the phone lines we go. You can join the conversation, 888-957-9570. Jimmy is in Bayview, wants to join the conversation here on Warriors wrap-up. Jimmy, what's up? How you doing?
I'm good. If I were the league, I'd find the Warriors for that for that team that's been put on the floor. I mean, this is the reason the NBA is struggling like it is. I'm happy for Pat Spencer. I really like him, but you know, this is the only trip to Indiana, and that, you know, people pay to see Steph Curry, and this is just it's just unacceptable. Our shiny new toy Dennis Schroeder scores 12 points. I mean, this should have been his green light coming out party. And I loved Steve Kerr. I'm from Chicago. I watched him as a player. But I mean, this is why coaches get fired is because the triangle offense only works for a certain five that know each other very well. Nobody can learn it. And it's very difficult for these new players to be able to run this. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jimmy. First of all, I'll get to your point about Steve Kerr and the offense that he's running. First of all, about the roster that the Warriors threw out there tonight. Again, no Steph, no Draymond, no Wiggins, no Kuminga, no Pajemski, and no GP2. Let's run through each and every one of those. Pajemski and GP2 are dealing with semi-serious injuries and have been out for a while. I think this was Gary Payton II's eighth consecutive missed game, and Pajemski's sixth, something like that. We're going to hear from Steve Kerr coming up a little bit later on here on Warriors wrap-up, maybe in about 10 or so minutes. I know he addressed the availability of those two on Monday. I think he said potentially for GP2, he seems encouraged, and he's not sure about Pajemski. But those are serious, semi-serious injuries that have kept those guys out for, you know, going on a few weeks now, a couple of weeks. So that's Pajemski and GP2. Wiggins is dealing with a personal matter. It is not even with the team. Now, if we can read the tea leaves, we don't know this for a fact. I know that his longtime partner is pregnant and nearing the end of a pregnancy, so I would imagine maybe they're expecting the birth of a baby. That's life happens. That's more important than basketball. Okay, so that's nothing that the Warriors can do about that. Yes, Wiggins, you get an excused absence if your partner is about to have a child. Okay, so that's another one checked off. We get to Jonathan Kuminga, who has a fairly serious ankle sprain. He was on crutches. He's on the trip but is in a boot. He clearly can't play. Okay, so we're through four now, and they are all clearly fair, right? And then you get to Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. And I imagine this is probably where Jimmy is directing most of his frustration. I mean, you got a near 37-year-old and another mid-30 veteran who has endless miles on their bodies at this point. And if you're the Warriors, First of all, it's not just Steve Kerr. In fact, it's not Steve Kerr at all. It's not his choice. It is the choice of the individual players and of the medical staff, the team doctors. And Steve Kerr said pregame, this is just the reality that we have to play with these guys at their age. If we want to push them now, guess what? We might miss them for a month in the future. And if you're the NBA and if you're the Warriors and you ask yourself, would you rather them miss a game on January 10th in Indiana, or would you rather them miss a month or 6 weeks, a few weeks from now? And the NBA would obviously rather you miss just this one game and a game here and a game there. Like, this is, I don't think we can point to what the Warriors are doing with their veterans as a reason why the NBA product is so bad now. I mean, Stephen Curry is literally 2 months from being 37 years old. Like, it's one thing if it's Joel Embiid, who's still in the middle of his prime. It's another thing if it's 37-year-old Stephen Curry. That would be my point. Now, Jimmy, to your other point about the offense that Steve Kerr is running, he's not running the triangle like Phil Jackson did. And I know there was some arguments about Phil when he was coaching the Knicks, and like, you got to adjust and run a different style. Like, you got to fit your scheme around the talent that you have. I've had some similar concerns about the Warriors offense. Tonight, though, you can throw tonight out the window. Now, interestingly enough, Steve Kerr did say some things about Quentin Post that we're going to have to hear coming up next. And I think this can get us into a larger conversation about, one, what the Warriors can or should do to try to adjust their roster, but also something that Steve Kerr can do to try to put his players in a better spot and with a better chance to succeed. I think there is something about the overall offense the Warriors are running and how it might not be too complementary to the roster that they've put together. And is that more blame on the person putting the roster together, Mike Dunleavy, or is it more on Steve Kerr for not adjusting his offensive plan of attack? We can get into that. Also, a lot more to get into. We got to praise Pat Spencer, Gui Santos. Again, they were both good in this one, a career night for Pat Spencer. I'm sure, despite the loss, he feels pretty good about himself. A career-high 17 points, made his first career three. Plenty more to get into as we continue. It's Warriors wrap-up on 95.7 The Game. And, of course, we will hear from Coach Kerr post-game after this break as well. It's Mark Randy with you. Warriors wrap-up continues as the Dubs fall in Indiana 108-96. More Warriors wrap-up next on 95.7 The Game.
Golden State with a one-point lead right now. A pass to the cutter. It's Spencer. He goes in and dumped it. Pat Spencer with a two-hand slam. A little elevation sensation for Spencer and a timeout for Indiana.
Now back to Warriors wrap-up on 95.7 The Game.
Well, who had a Pat Spencer elevation sensation on your bingo card? I don't think any of us did. Pat Spencer, how about that? 17 points, a career high, made his first career three-pointer in this basketball game as well. He was really good in his 20 minutes and 20 seconds on the court. 17 points, 3 rebounds, an assist. Did turn the ball over 3 times, but 7 of 12 from the field, 1 of 3 from downtown. He had himself a night, a career night. And I'm sure, again, despite the loss, Pat Spencer at the very least feels encouraged by his performance. And hey, a little bit of confidence could go a long way. You never know how long these absences are going to last for the Warriors. Again tonight, no Steph Curry, no Draymond Green, no Andrew Wiggins, no Jonathan Kuminga, no GP2, and no Brandon Pajemski. The Warriors might need a little bit more from Pat Spencer. And with tonight, he probably has a little bit more belief that he can do it when he is called upon. Now, the Warriors very likely on Monday will have Steph Curry available. I'm sure they will also have Draymond Green available. It seems like the Warriors also may have GP2 available. Still uncertain about Brandon Pajemski and uncertain about Andrew Wiggins. They will not have Jonathan Kuminga available, but there is a chance that next time the Warriors play Monday north of the border in Toronto, the Warriors will have the majority of their roster back. And there's a chance everyone is back other than Jonathan Kuminga, but we will have to wait and see on that. Of course, we'll let you know come Monday when the Warriors again are in action against the Toronto Raptors. Tonight, though, it was a loss. Warriors fall to the Pacers 108-96. Welcome back to Warriors Wrap Up on 95.7 The Game. It's Mark Randy with you. You can join the conversation by giving me a call or shooting me a text. That number, 888-957-9570. And we're going to hear from Steve Kerr coming up in just a little bit. But first, let's go back out to the phone lines. Gloria is in San Francisco and wants to join the conversation. What's up, Gloria? You're on Warriors Wrap-Up. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Grandy. Thanks for taking my call. Happy New Year to you and the callers. You know, I sit back and I say, wow, you know, perhaps it's a good time out to watch a gritty team that, in terms of all the serviceable journeymen, not named Draymond or superstar Steph Curry or even dependable Kevon Looney, when they are the nuts and bolts of the Warriors, outside of them, this team is just playing to provide a good time. No one fears this team. Perhaps Steve Kerr could tweak here or there, but they're not getting enough offensive production from this team, and I don't think that any X's and O's is really going to change that. They're just not talented enough. But it was good to see a big man come out in Quentin Post. I really am encouraged by that. And I want to propose something to you, your thoughts. If the Warriors didn't get that young two-guard, I believe he's a two-guard, from Philadelphia that got injured, and they instead would have gotten Clancy and Cam Johnson, a good friend of mine who's into the sports, said that that would have helped the Warriors tremendously. I'd love to hear your take on that. Thank you.
Yeah, Gloria, really quick. When you say that young two guard from Philadelphia, are you talking about De'Anthony Melton, the signing in the offseason?
Yes. Instead of getting him, perhaps they could have targeted Clancy and Cam Johnson. Would that have helped the Warriors be more competitive?
Gotcha.
What do you think?
Gotcha, Gloria. Appreciate the question, and thanks for the call, and thanks for listening as always. Do I think Cam Johnson is a better player than De'Anthony Melton if both are healthy? Yeah, probably. And Cam Johnson has a longer history of staying healthy than De'Anthony Melton, or should I say De'Anthony Melton has a longer history of being injured than Cam Johnson. The issue was, though, the Warriors did not have a lot of money. De'Anthony Melton was a free agent. Cam Johnson, I don't believe he was a free agent. I don't think he was signed this offseason. I can double check that for you, but I believe he's been under contract with the Nets for a while now. Let me double check that for you. But if we're just saying the Warriors having Cam Johnson versus De'Anthony Melton, what's better? I'd say Cam Johnson is better. But yeah, he signed a 4-year extension with the Brooklyn Nets in July of 2023. So not this past offseason, but the offseason before. So he wasn't an option for the Warriors this offseason, unless you're talking about a trade. But again, with the trade, you have to send out the same amount of money that you're coming that you're bringing in. The best way I can answer your question, Gloria, is I think considering what the Warriors' options were this offseason, considering that they're seemingly the word from, you know, management, from ownership down, was we're going to get out of the luxury tax and we're going to avoid the repeater tax and fees and the extra punishment that comes with that in the new CBA. That was the goal for the Warriors. Because that was the goal, they really did not have a lot of room to do much this offseason. And I thought the De'Anthony Melton signing, the Warriors used their full mid-level exception to do that, which hard-capped them, but they had no intention of spending any more money than that anyway. So the hard cap really did not matter for them because they weren't planning on going beyond that anyway. It's a little bit of a risk because Melton, again, injury-prone, at least his history suggests that. But clearly when he's healthy, I mean, he's a pretty darn good player. If he did not have the injury history that he does, he would have been priced out of the Warriors' of the space the Warriors had to sign him. Like, if he had been healthy last year, the Warriors would not have been able to sign him because some other team would have signed him to a lot bigger contract. That's how good of a player D'Anthony Melton is. The reason why the Warriors were able to get him was because his injury history suppressed his value, and that very same thing might be happening again this offseason because he had to have ACL surgery and is missing basically the entire season. So maybe the Warriors bring him back. But to answer your question, Gloria, I'm not so sure the Warriors had that option. In fact, I can guarantee you they did not, again, unless they were offering some sort of trade. But trades mean you got to send off some players, too. And then we're talking about more than just Cameron Johnson for D'Anthony Melton. We're talking about Cameron Johnson instead of Melton, and then also Cameron Johnson instead of whoever is going to make the money work, which would have been, I don't know, something like at the very least, you're looking at like Moody and GP2 or Looney and Slow-Mo, and does that make the Warriors better? Yeah, maybe, but you're not as surefire because you are subtracting pieces in order to make that one addition. I love Cam Johnson as a player, and I think he should be on the Warriors' wish list at the trade deadline. Now, something else that Gloria said was about Quentin Post, and it was interesting to see the Warriors working with a stretch five. The Warriors have like never had a stretch five. You could maybe point to in the early Steve Kerr days, Maurice Spates sometimes would play small ball five alongside Draymond in some of the Warriors' smaller lineups. And he, of course, was a floor spacer, and very few players got the Warriors crowd going at Oracle like Maurice Spates. So that's one name I could throw out. More recently in 2022, Nemanja Bjelica or Otto Porter. I think Bjelica played a decent amount of small ball five. Porter at times also played some small ball five. But in terms of a seven-footer that can shoot, the Warriors don't really have any history of those guys. Quentin Post is one, and he played a little bit today, made a three, had an and one, drove with the left hand, could not get the layup to go, but put the ball on the deck a little bit. And the pick and pop that becomes available with a big man setting screens along the perimeter, it just opens up so much else for the Warriors, and that was really, really interesting to watch. In a very small sample size tonight, but one, if Post develops, that could be something in the future. And two, if the Warriors acquire a shooting big at the trade deadline, tonight could have been a little, advanced screening of what the Warriors might, their offense might look like if they do acquire someone like that and how they might use a guy with that skill sets. Let's hear what Steve Kerr had to say about all this, because I'm sure he was asked about Quentin Post. I'm sure he was very, very complimentary of what Pat Spencer did tonight. And I think overall of the Warriors' fight in this game, you lose this one by 12, but you were in it essentially the entire way. You cut the lead down to 4 at one point in the fourth quarter. In fact, I have it here. A Buddy Hield, in fact, you were within 5, sorry, not 4. A Buddy Hield 3 and a Trace Jackson Davis fast break bucket. The Warriors were within 5 at 86-81 with 8:50 left in the fourth quarter. Then Indiana quickly an 8-0 run. That's when the Warriors started committing some turnovers. They had a shot that got blocked at the rim. Trace Jackson Davis could not get around. I believe it was the big man for Indiana, Miles Turner, of course. Shot blocker, great space floor spacer as a big man as well. And then the 8-0 run kind of ended the basketball game, and the Warriors couldn't get back in it. But overall, I'm sure Steve Kerr encouraged by the effort he saw from the players that were on the floor for the Warriors tonight in Indiana. Okay, let's hear from Coach Kerr post-game tonight in Indianapolis after the Warriors lose 108-96. Here is Coach Kerr post-game tonight.
You know, shorthanded, back-to-back. Guys did a great job of really hanging in there. We just needed to have a little stretch, make 3 or 4 threes in a row and get over the hump. I think it was 86-81. And, we're right there. They took care of business, knocked down some shots, and we couldn't quite get there. But proud of the group, and a lot of guys played well, and keep moving forward.
What did you make of Pat's performance tonight?
Yeah, Pat was great. You know, aggressive, really attacked the paint and wasn't afraid to let it fly. you know, he's a really good player. The game makes sense when he's out there. There's a flow to it, and it was fun watching him play. It was fun getting Quentin his first, you know, real minutes at a time where we're still in the game, just to see him come out there and space the floor. You see what the impact is of having a space big. You just go pick and pop, and all of a sudden, the whole lane opens up. And that's a nice look for us. You know, it's something we don't normally have, and so we're generating a lot of our offense through our movement and split cuts and all that. But if Quentin can develop, he could be a real threat for us and give us a totally different look offensively.
You haven't had that kind of look from the five position very often in the past however many years. How nice might it be to have someone like Quentin in the mix?
Yeah, it's you know, it's something that Mike Dunleavy and I talk about periodically. You know, we've had guys who have helped in that regard, maybe not from the five spot, but, you know, Otto, Porter, and Belly in 22, you know, both guys really stretched the floor for us, and you could feel the difference. And but those guys aren't easy to find, and you know, that's why we drafted Quentin, to see if he could develop. He's a really good player. He's got experience, 5 years of college, shoots it well. You can see, you know, put it on the floor and had a little left-handed layup. It didn't go, but you can see the skill is there. And so we'll continue to work with him and get him back to Santa Cruz for a lot of reps. But yeah, that's something that we're trying to develop.
Thinking about bringing it back Monday?
Not sure yet. Yeah. Gary is hopeful. I just talked to him. He thinks he's going to be ready to play in Toronto, but the training staff has to clear him. And then Wiggs will just be day-to-day based on his circumstances at home. I'm sorry?
Brandon, is there any chance
on the stuff coming? Yeah, not sure. He's not sure if he's going to be ready or not.
It looked like Schroeder might have twisted an ankle in the fourth. Is he doing all right?
He said he was okay, yeah, after the game. Heavy minutes the last two nights. You know, he's played a lot of minutes since he's gotten here and has not missed a game. And it'll be good to have a couple of days for him to rest up.
All right, there's Steve Kerr postgame in Indiana after the Warriors fell to the Pacers 108-96. Really quick to recap those injury updates from Steve Kerr at the end. Status for Monday in Toronto, Warriors and Raptors. Not sure about Andrew Wiggins. He's day-to-day, and it will be based on his circumstances at home. He is not with the team, has not been with the team so far on this road trip. Gary Payton II is hopeful that he could play on Monday, but ultimately he still has to be cleared by team doctors. And Steve Kerr is, quote, not sure about Pajemski's availability on Monday, but it seems like the Warriors at least will get one of those bodies back, I would imagine, at least. And plus, Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, I would imagine, are going to play in that one as well, as they were held out not because of any sort of major injury issue, but more because of injury management, or what a lot of us might call it, load management. And that's something that the 415 is bringing up right now on the text line. The 415 saying, so the Warriors think they can just concede games like tonight and not play Steph and Dre. You have the whole weekend off until Monday, but we can just give games away. 415, I just want to ask you what you think the Warriors' other option is, because you've got a near 37-year-old Steph Curry who is dealing with bilateral knee tendonitis, who had fluid in his knee. Has fluid in his knee. He played 36 minutes last night, and the risk you run by pushing Steph too hard, and you're absolutely right, like, the Warriors don't have the ability to just lose games, to just give games away, but it's their reality considering the age of their players. And it's also maybe an indictment on the way the roster has been built. You would love to be able to win some games without Steph and without Dre. And by the way, the Warriors are now 5-3 without Steph this year. So actually, they have been able to win some games without their best player. But the risk you run by pushing Steph too hard when he is clearly nowhere near 100%, dealing with bumps and bruises everywhere and something a little more serious in his knees, he's about to turn 37, you risk losing him for an extended period of time if you push him too hard. It's unfortunate, but it is the Warriors' unfortunate reality. This is just what has to happen. Now, Steve Kerr did not close the door on Steph playing both ends of a back-to-back in the future. Just as of right now, while this bilateral knee tendonitis is still bugging him, they can't possibly push him. They can't overextend him, overexert him at this stage. It's frustrating, I know, and the Warriors might have a couple more wins if they were able to do that, but it's just their reality, and it's what makes the Warriors' situation so difficult to find an easy answer to, because one, you have a player in Steph who is 36, almost 37, who's not as good as he once was, but still very good, is making an absurd amount of money, which makes it more difficult for you to build a good roster around him. And this is the time of his career when you need a better roster around him because, again, he isn't quite as good and he can't play quite as many games as he used to. It's just the reality of what happens when you have a true all-time great on your roster and you get towards the end of his career. This happens to essentially every all-time great at the end of their career. It really, really does. Maybe Tim Duncan is the one exception, but we also forget the last couple of years of Tim Duncan's career. It was not very pretty for San Antonio either. But this is not new, and this is a reality the Warriors have been prepping for a long time. Now, you can believe that the Warriors haven't prepped themselves correctly for this situation, or they have not executed well enough in their preparation for this moment, but this is a moment that they knew has been coming for quite a while, and this is the way they've chosen to attack it. And on an individual night-by-night basis, I cannot blame the Warriors for not playing Steph Curry tonight. First of all, again, it's not even up to Steve Kerr. It's not even up to Mike Dunleavy. It's not even up to Joe Lacob. It's up to the training staff, and it's up to Steph Curry himself. And the Warriors don't want to risk it and overextend Steph Curry at this moment. I want to go back to something that Steve Kerr said, though, about Quentin Post, and I can play it here for you. Cam, just make sure you have my hotkey pot up there in the back. Steve Kerr talking about Quentin Post. We saw Quentin Post make a cameo tonight, playing his first meaningful minutes. He had a bucket in LA against the Clippers in garbage time. We've seen him a little bit. But tonight, he got a chance to play when the game was still in the balance, right? A game was not decided, and we got to see Quentin Post. He played 7 minutes. He had 6 points, 2 of 4 from the field, 1 of 2 from downtown. Had a nice drive where he missed the layup, also finished an and-one in the paint, and hit a top-of-the-key three-pointer. Good in 7 minutes, I thought. Encouraging from Quentin Post. Here's Steve Kerr talking about Quentin Post and the threat that he might become if he continues to develop. Here's Coach Kerr.
It was fun getting Quentin his first real minutes at a time where we're still in the game, just to see him come out there and space the floor, or if Quentin can develop, he could be a real threat for us and give us a totally different look offensively. You know, it's something that Mike Dunleavy and I talk about periodically. You know, we've had guys who have helped in that regard, maybe not from the five spot, but, you know, Otto, Porter, and Belly in 22, you know, both guys really stretched the floor for us, and you could feel the difference. And but those guys aren't easy to find. You know, that's why we drafted Quentin, to see if he could develop. He's a really good player. He's got experience, 5 years of college, shoots it well. You can see, you know, put it on the floor and had a little left-handed layup. It didn't go, but you can see the skill is there. And so we'll continue to work with him and get him back to Santa Cruz for a lot of reps. That's, that's something that we're trying to develop.
It's that really interesting answer from Steve Kerr there about Quentin Post, because I'm not sure how you all took it in, and you can let me know, shooting me a text or giving me a call, 888-957-9570. Again, it's Warriors wrap-up here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy with you. I couldn't help but listen to Steve Kerr talk about Quentin Post and not think about a player other than Quentin Post. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's where my mind went. Quentin Post has, you know, the potential to eventually become, you know, a, a serviceable big man in the NBA, and maybe his ceiling is much higher than that. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. I think it's very fair to just say Quentin Post is not going to have much of an impact on the Warriors this year, and he might not have much of an impact on the Warriors next year. It just seems the way that it's going. I mean, Steve Kerr said he had a really nice showing, but we're going to get him back down to Santa Cruz so he can keep playing a lot. Like, if he's up here with the big club, he's not going to be playing a lot. It's just the way that it is. But when Steve Kerr is talking about how having a big that can shoot on the floor just changes the geometry of the offense and how it makes everything so much easier, it feels like that might be something the Warriors are looking to acquire at the trade deadline. And I got a text that came in a little bit ago on our text line. Again, 888-957-9570. The 415, appreciate you tuning in as always, 415, writes, now that Post has shown Vucevic is obsolete and necessary. Imagine the complimentary big, true big, and rim paint protecting pick and roll proficient center to come. I'm not sure I agree with that, 415. I mean, if the goal here is to find a partner for Stephen Curry, someone that can help Steph Curry win now, right? Like, Steph Curry is running out of time. The clock is ticking. Have you seen how down he's looked on the court recently, specifically during and after both the Kings and Heat games at home on this past homestand? Steph Curry is looking for help right now, and we can all believe that Quentin Post has a bright future in front of him, but we can call it that, a future and not a present. He's not going to be a reason the Warriors jump from being in the play-in to being the fifth seed in the Western Conference. But hearing Steve Kerr talk about what a shooting big can do for the Warriors' offense, my mind is racing with what that might mean for the conversations that are happening within the Warriors' front office right now. Let's listen to it one more time. Again, here's Steve Kerr talking about Quentin Post. Or maybe think of it this way, what Quentin Post represents. Here's Steve Kerr talking about what a big seven-footer that can shoot. What does that look like in this Warriors' offense, Steve?
It was fun getting Quentin his first real minutes at a time where we're still in the game, to see him come out there and space the floor. Or if Quentin can develop, he could be a real threat for us and give us a totally different look offensively. You know, it's something that Mike Dunleavy and I talk about periodically. You know, we've had guys who have helped in that regard, maybe not from the five spot, but, you know, Otto, Porter, and Belly in 22, you know, both guys really stretched the floor for us, and you could feel the difference. And but those guys aren't easy to find. You know, that's why we drafted Quentin, to see if he could develop. He's a really good player. He's got experience, 5 years of college, shoots it well. You can see, you know, put it on the floor and had a little left-handed layup. It didn't go, but you can see the skill is there. And so we'll continue to work with him and get him back to Santa Cruz for a lot of reps. That's, that's something that we're trying to develop.
All right. I mean, there's Steve Kerr talking about Quentin Post. But again, in my mind, I hear him talking about Quentin Post, and I hear him talking about just any big that can shoot. It gives the Warriors something that they have not had in the past. Again, he mentioned Otto Porter and Nemanja Bjelica. I also threw out Maurice Spates earlier. Like, those are the closest thing to shooting bigs the Warriors have ever had. I mean, I guess Kevin Durant is, because he's darn near 7 feet tall, but that's just a cheat code, and that's not real basketball, right? That's what Steve Kerr would say. Like, that, welcome to the real world was the Warriors post-Kevin Durant. When they had KD, and they had Steph, and they had Draymond, and they had Klay, like, they were blessed, no doubt. That wasn't the real world. The Warriors are now in the real world, and have been for a while. And part of the reason why the 2022 NBA championship feels so sweet is because it came in that real world of NBA, of Warriors basketball, when it wasn't so easy for them. But even in 2022, again, they didn't have the true stretch seven-footer. And I'm not so sure Steve Kerr, again, is talking about Quentin Post as much as he's talking about that kind of player in general. And there is one guy on the trade block, potentially, ahead of the February 6th trade deadline, that fits that description. And that is Nikola Vucevic. Nikola Vucevic, a legit center who can shoot with some of the best of them in the NBA. He can get you double-digit rebounds as well, and he can shoot. And just think about how the Warriors' offense would look and feel different with someone like Nikola Vucevic on it. And Steve Kerr was just talking about it. He could see and you could feel just how different the geometry of the offensive half of the floor looked and felt when Quentin Post was out there. The Warriors no longer had to run split action all the time. They no longer had to run pick and roll with Steph and Draymond. I know Steph and Draymond were not available tonight, but in general, even when they're out there, they don't have a shooting big that can space the floor from the inside out. You have the ability to run Quentin Post up to set a screen for whoever the ball handler is, and instead of pick and roll, you pick and pop, and suddenly you've got whoever's checking your center in Quentin Post tonight, or Nikola Vucevic if you were to acquire him, who has to come out and respect that shot. And what does that do? It opens up everything else in the paint. Everything else in the paint. And that's when you get the Warriors' back cuts working. You have a back screen on the other half of the floor. And when you have the defense that's so worried about a pick and roll where you've got two shooters, like imagine a pick and roll with Steph, not a pick and roll, pardon me, a pick and pop with Steph and Vucevic. What is the defense supposed to do there? You have to cover for your guy getting screened, and you have to jump at Steph, ideally with two dudes, otherwise Steph will kill you himself. But you also have to worry about Vucevic popping out to the three-point line. And then you've got, say, Wiggins from the weak side cutting baseline, or you have Draymond setting a back screen for Wiggins to cut, and you've got no one home because you've got shooters elsewhere on the floor. It would open up so much else for the Warriors offensively. And also, as you continue to look even further, like say when Jonathan Kuminga comes back, it makes other lineups easier for the Warriors to go with. Remember when the Warriors tried at the beginning of the season to throw out their Curry, Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond, and Trayce Jackson-Davis, and it was a disaster offensively because they could not shoot at all? You throw Vucevic or this general 7-foot shooter into that group, suddenly you got a shooter at the 5, you've got the best shooter in NBA history at the 1, you've got a decent shooter at the 2, and you've got, when he's open and in rhythm and from the corner, a shooter at the 3 in Kuminga. It makes that lineup work better, like so much better. And again, then you have the elite athleticism and cutting ability of Kuminga. And I know I'm getting ahead of myself because Kuminga might miss, who knows, 4 or 5 weeks. Or maybe even 6 weeks. We don't really know. Generally, the return to play timeline for people who suffered an injury similar to Kuminga's is closer to 6 weeks than it is to 3 weeks. So this might be a long absence, and maybe this whole conversation is all for naught, and maybe by the time Kuminga comes back, the Warriors have either made a big move that entirely changes the chemistry of their roster, or maybe they're so far out of it that it doesn't even matter what happens anymore. Like, all of that is possible. But I can't help but feel like Steve Kerr talking about what it was like and how much more spacing there was on the floor when they had a shooting big out there, one who has hardly even played a minute in the NBA up to this point in his career. Like, just imagine what it is when you have a legitimate, respected three-point shooter in Nikola Vucevic out there. So maybe this is a Steve Kerr, like, between-the-lines plea to the front office to say, get me Nikola Vucevic, because that made a difference in the offense tonight, just in the few moments that Quentin Post was out there. Again, maybe I'm completely misinterpreting, and Steve Kerr is solely talking about Quentin Post's development. And he's not, in general, talking about a player who fits that description of a 7-foot shooter. But it is, I think it's hard to deny what that a guy of that skill set would add to the Warriors. 888-957-9570 if you want to join the conversation. The 415 is doing so on our text line right now. The 415 saying Vucevic is not a Zubac stopper. He's an arc lingerer. He doesn't play rim or paint defense. Vucevic is a 34-year-old Markkanen. I'm not so sure I exactly agree with the Markkanen comp, but I hear what you're saying, 415. Vucevic is not a guy who's going to man your defense in the interior and be a reason why you're a top half of the league defense. The Warriors, though, have a top half of the league defense right now. And the issue is offensively. If it if it means being a little worse defensively, although, I mean, let's not pretend like Kevon Looney or Trayce Jackson-Davis are these great rim protectors either. And maybe 415, you're talking more so about acquiring a rim-protecting big. I don't know what use the Warriors have for a rim-protecting big right now, because he just, if he can't shoot, like, obviously the best of both worlds is a rim-protecting big who can shoot. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. of the Grizzlies would absolutely be a dream on the Warriors. Even Miles Turner. JJJ, Jaren Jackson Jr. for me, a level up on Miles Turner. But a big who can protect the paint, who can shoot, and who can run the floor. That would be a dream on this Warriors team. But ain't no one giving up on dreams in the NBA, and no one is going to give the Warriors a dream player just because they're asking nicely for one. So you kind of got to pick. And for me, if I'm picking between attributes of big men, and one attribute is a floor spacing 7-footer who can rebound, or a big who can protect the paint, I'm going for the floor spacing big who can shoot and who can rebound versus the one who is a lockdown defender interior. And I think the 415 is talking about Quentin Post being the guy that can space the floor and grab rebounds. And then you already have that big set. Then you go and get the other one. The Warriors don't play like big lineups that often. Like, you're playing Draymond in all of your most important lineups. You're playing Kuminga, and when he's healthy, you're playing Wiggins, and you're playing Steph, and lately you're playing Schroeder. There isn't room for, I think, two more bigs. So get the best singular big that you can, and the one that's available seemingly seems to be Nikola Vucevic. He would be better than Quentin Post right now, and that's not saying all that much. Quentin Post, you know, could have a very bright future ahead of him, but he's just a rookie, and the Warriors are trying to win. If they're trying to develop and they didn't have Steph, or Steph was hurt and out for the year, knock on wood, then this could be a different story. But you're trying to win right now, and Nikola Vucevic gives you a better chance in my mind. 888-957-9570. It's Warriors wrap up here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy with you. Again, 888-957-9570. You can join the conversation. Let's get to Jason in Oakland, who's been waiting on hold here for a bit. Jason, what's up? You're on Warriors wrap up on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
How you doing? I hope you're having a good night.
Thank you. You too, man.
Yeah. This is what I wanted to tell you. You know we a bad team when every game, it seems after the loss, we talking about trades. Every game, we're not really celebrating a win. Even if we get a win, we talking about we still need to trade so-and-so. So, you know, this season is not looking good so far, you know. And I'm saying it myself, hopefully we do get a big trade, which is probably never going to happen. But we got to start coming to the conclusion that the Warriors, our best days are behind us, man. And if we get a big trade, hey, so be it. But it's really looking like our best days as a, you know, winning championships and going deep into the playoffs. We, you know, 22, let's celebrate that last year, because it looked like, you know, these next couple years ain't going to be too great.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jason, and thanks for the kind words as well. I mean, yeah, I think it would take a crazy person to not admit that. Now, just because the best days are behind you does not mean that there are some still good days ahead of you. But, I mean, this is a Warriors franchise that has won 4 championships over the last 10 years, right? The first time they won was 2015. It's now 2025. They've won 4 in that span. There is no doubt that the best days are behind this team. The question is just how bad are the days that are ahead? And by days ahead, I mean legitimately like tomorrow and the next day and the rest of this season, not like 5 years down the road. 5 years down the road is an eternity from now. Steph Curry likely will not be in the NBA anymore, and Draymond Green probably won't be a Warrior anymore. He might not be, probably won't be in the NBA anymore. Like, that's an entirely different question. But, you know, the Warriors' best days are behind them, but their best days were so incredibly high that you still could have pretty darn good days left, and it still could be not even close to as good as it was in the past. But the question becomes, there is a balancing act here for the Warriors. It is how many of your resources do you want to put into trying to help this era of the Warriors play good basketball, versus how much do you want to protect your future? And as far as I'm concerned, it's a pretty simple and straightforward proposition for me. It's do everything you can to try to give Steph Curry the best chance possible to win ring number five. Not that it's at all probable or even necessarily likely, but you got to do what you can. And I think, honestly, where the Warriors might be headed soon, and this is something that I'm going to talk about more throughout the next few weeks as we approach the trade deadline, is where the Warriors' motivation comes from, right? Because I look at this a couple of different ways. You can see how Steph Curry was reacting, and Steph's body language has always been pretty expressive. Like, he's one of the things that he struggles with is hiding how he's feeling, and it comes out in his body language and how he carries himself, and he kind of slouches his shoulders, and you can see it on his face, and he's sitting on the bench, and he's got the towel over his head, and he's not really reacting to any of his teammates, right? Like, you can see when Steph is kind of fuming, and he was fuming on the Sunday loss to the Kings when the Warriors lost by 30, and then the Tuesday loss to the Heat when the Heat absolutely ran the Warriors off the floor, when the Warriors did not play the night before and the Heat had played a double overtime game and lost in Sacramento the night before. And you could tell just how frustrated Steph Curry was. So with that in mind, and with that being the backdrop on all of this, and remember Steph's comments from the summer when they were getting ready with Team USA, and he essentially said, I want to be a Warrior for life, but things can change. I don't want to be a bottom feeder and just coming in every day to practice and cashing a check, but not being competitive. That doesn't do it for him. He wants to win number five. That's all that he cares about. It is the only thing motivating him at this point. I think there is a reality where if the Warriors continue to really struggle like this, as they have been, where maybe this doesn't happen, but the Warriors in their head get the idea that, oh man, if we don't at least show Steph that we're committed to trying to helping him win here one last time, Steph might ask out. Steph might ask for a trade. And if that happens, that's the nightmare scenario, if Steph asks for a trade. So what do the Warriors do in order to avoid that nightmare scenario? Maybe they're a little more encouraged to pull the trigger on a trade that they have been up to this point very hesitant to do. So maybe the Warriors' motivation on making a move and making a trade changes from trying to win with Steph to just convincing Steph to want to stay. Because if the Warriors stand pat, let's say the Warriors stand pat for this trade deadline, and they get to the offseason and still nothing big has happened, and the Warriors are trying to essentially run it back with a similar group, there will be a number of changes because the Warriors have expiring deals, but there's no real needle mover. What is Steph Curry left to think at that point? And maybe it happens at the next trade deadline, if the Warriors are still kind of right around 500 a year from now. And then maybe Steph says, you know what? I want to try to win one more, and I've got like a year, maybe 2 year, decent years left in me. Let's find a mutually beneficial trade so I can try to get number five, and you can try to begin a rebuild with the assets that I will net you via a trade. The Warriors don't want to do that. They want Steph to ride off into the sunset as a Warrior because he fills the building. He brings them in so much cash night after night after night that even if they are a terrible basketball team, with Steph on them, they're still a very profitable basketball team. And I think the Warriors might be a little more encouraged to make a move like that if they are scared that Steph might ask out. And maybe that means they're a little more willing, again, to make that sort of move. But that's also dangerous, because when you are desperate like that to hold on to something, to hold on to somebody that might not want to ideally be here anymore, and again, this is purely speculation on my point, you're more willing to give up the grandfather offer to make something happen. And maybe you look back 5 years from now and you say you gave up Kuminga and you gave up two first-round picks plus X, Y, and Z to go and get Jimmy Butler. And you look back 5 years from now, and now your cupboard is bare. You don't have Steph because he's gone. You traded him away. Jimmy Butler is no longer a Warrior because he was a Warrior for only 4 months or a year and a half, whatever it is. Or you paid him a giant amount of money and you have him under contract until he's nearly 40 years old, and you're paying him $50 million at that point, and it's hard for you to you know, build a roster around that because you have an anchor of a contract left? Like, that's scary as hell, and it's probably why the Warriors have been hesitant to make a move. But I feel like they might be more willing to make that move if they're scared that Steph is beginning to think about, maybe I should try to wrap this thing up elsewhere because elsewhere might give me a better chance to win ring number 5. That is a possibility. It is a possibility. It's a scary possibility, but it is a possibility for the Warriors. And I just throw that out there because I've had this thought in my head ever since I watched Steph Curry be so frustrated Sunday against the Kings and Tuesday against the Heat. If he begins to think maybe he wants to go elsewhere and the Warriors see that, or maybe there's some conversation there, no doubt the Warriors have more motivation than ever to go and make a move work. And, I mean, that's undoubtedly, I think, the best thing that could happen to the Warriors right now. But the question is, how do you balance the now versus the future? For me, there's not much of a conversation because Steph is Steph, and you do what you can to help Steph as much as you possibly can. But I would be a little wary if I'm the Warriors of where your motivation is coming from. Is your motivation from trying to help give Steph the best chance to win? Or is your motivation, let's make this move because we're fearing Steph might want to leave and this might alleviate some of those fears and give him an opportunity to try to go for it? But what happens if you get to a point where you're convinced Steph might ask out unless you go and make, you know, a trade for whoever it is, but you, Mike Dunleavy and Joe Lacob and Steve Kerr, are convinced that that trade isn't going to be enough to help you win? So what are you to do at that point? It is an interesting conundrum, and I think the Warriors might be headed down that road if this thing doesn't get itself sorted out here soon. This isn't a thing that's going to happen in the next 4 weeks, right, before the deadline. It might be something that develops throughout the offseason or into next season, right? Because I don't think Steph Curry, in fact, I can very confidently say Steph Curry will not demand a trade before this trade deadline. It might be something that continues to sit and eat at him over the offseason and into next season. Then maybe ultimately there's a decision made at that point. But the Warriors are going to have to get to a point where they decide, are we going to try to make Steph happy, or are we going to try to do what's best for the organization? Because there will come a point in time where those two things do not align anymore. We're not there yet. I still think the best thing for the organization and the best thing for Steph is to make a move to help this team. But there might come a time where those two things are not the same thing, where trying to keep Steph happy means damaging the future of your organization so much that it's not worth whatever amount you get better in the present. I don't think it's there yet, but we might get to a point where we do get to that point. 888-957-9570, another call just came in. Let's get to that here before we wrap things up on Warriors Wrap Up. Howard is in San Francisco and wants to join the conversation. What's up, Howard? How you doing?
How are you? Love the show. Thank you. This might be a little controversial, and it's not my heart speaking, it's my brain speaking. But if I could really be objective, I want to say that with the capital that we could get for Steph now, as compared to 2 or 3 years from now, and or even a year from now, when he makes that demand, and we're even in a, Steph's a year older, and he hasn't done that much left, we won't get much for him. But right now, we could build the next 10 years with the draft picks and the opportunities for the young guys on our team to develop if Steph were to leave. And again, I love Steph. He's the reason I love the Warriors. So this is a really practical head comment that I'm making, but I'm wondering whether if we're really all being objective, that might be the best opportunity for the Warriors to be excellent for the next, 8 years. What do you think?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Howard, and it's an interesting question. I will say, as early as last summer, I, on these very airwaves, to a lot of people yelling at me and a lot of laughter, I proposed I hesitate to say the best thing for the organization. If, let's put it this way, if you're trying to minimize the amount of time between championships, if you're trying to minimize the amount of time between championships, so 2022 to whenever the next championship comes, if you're trying to minimize that time, the best way to do that, and the way to do that, might be to trade Steph Curry. Because we can look at this in a rational way and conclude, as I think a lot of us do, this Warriors team, led by Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, probably are not going to win another championship. And it's sad, and it's emotional, but it is, I think, likely true. It is the likeliest scenario, right? Like, this Warrior team is probably not going to win another title. Like, if we just look at it statistically, I mean, this team, this group, Steph Curry has what? This year, two more, and maybe another after that? And again, keep in mind, every year that passes, you know, they progressively get worse, that veteran group. It seems unlikely that they're going to win another championship in the next 4 years. So if your goal is to minimize the amount of time between titles, maybe the best thing is, as our caller just suggested, to trade Steph and begin the rebuild now. Use Steph as the asset to get you a haul of picks, young players, young assets, and that could be the building block along with Kuminga for the next era of Warriors basketball. Now, there's so many other things to consider other than just that, right? If you trade away Steph, suddenly you don't have a draw, and Chase Center is empty, and Joe Lacob is losing money, and the Warriors aren't profitable for however long. And then, if you're loading up on draft picks, you have to rely on those draft picks hitting. And that hasn't been a thing that happens. I mean, the Warriors just had three lottery picks within the last handful of years. Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody. That is certainly 0 for 1 on Wiseman. Jury still out on the other two. Kuminga looks like it could very well be a hit, but it hasn't quite gone to plan exactly. And Moses Moody, I think the return on investment for the 14th overall pick, you would have hoped for more. The return on investment for those three, wait, if you look at them all three in one, Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody, the return on investment there is way lower than you would have hoped. Now, past failure does not mean that the future is going to be that bleak as well, but there is also reason to believe that just because you have a lot of draft picks does not mean those are suddenly going to become good players. In fact, I was in the camp that the Warriors should have traded at least a couple of those picks for proven NBA players because it fit your timeline better. And the Warriors kind of said, you know what, we're going to do it anyway, and we won the 2022 championship anyway, but without any help basically from any of those picks that you made. And imagine now if you had some of those players you had acquired for those draft picks still leading the way for your franchise. Now it would feel a little bit different. But there is a legitimate argument that that could be best. There's also the other emotional aspect of it. And there's the business side of it and the economic side of it. And that's all a big part of it. I think the only way it could ever happen, and I would be incredibly shocked if it were to happen, but the only way that it could happen, and this is what I was getting at earlier, is if Steph Curry were to go up to the front office and say, let's work on a trade. That's the only way it could happen, because there is no way the Warriors are trading Stephen Curry without Stephen Curry's asking for it. And if Steph Curry asks for it, maybe the Warriors don't even oblige. Like, just because Steph wants to trade does not mean the Warriors have to trade him. But I would imagine that Steph Curry has built up enough equity there that he has some sway and he might get what he wants, especially if it's something like that. It's all something to consider, and it's not happening this trade deadline. But if this continues down this road and Steph is still so committed to trying to win one more championship, I mean, if you were to ask right now, rank this Warriors team, wherever they fall among all NBA teams, as the best, most likely spot for Steph Curry to win a championship. I mean, it's not in the top half, right? It can't be. It can't possibly be, looking at what this team is trotting out night after night after night. And the 262 makes a good point on the text line. The Curry contract makes it difficult to trade him because of the new CBA rules. Yeah, you're right. It does make it difficult. Does not mean it's impossible, though. But it is something that the Warriors are going to have to face at some point. Not facing trading Steph, but facing the reality that they are going to be a team in the tail end of Steph's career that is simply not going to be a great basketball team. That is very, very possible for the Warriors. Okay, final order of business before we get on out of here for the night. Again, after the Warriors fell to the Pacers 108-96, it is, as always, time for Crashing the Boards, which is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, the Bay Area leader in collision repair. And this is an easy one tonight because there was only one Warrior in double figures. One Warrior in double figure rebounds, and that was Trayce Jackson-Davis. 10 boards tonight for TJD, fell a point shy of a double-double in this one. Interestingly enough, for TJD, in the first half, he had all 10 of his rebounds. TJD without a single rebound in the second half. That is hard to believe. Zero rebounds in the second half for TJD, but he had 10 in the first half. As a result, he gets our Crashing the Boards honor, which is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, the Bay Area leader in collision repair. Thanks, as always, to Chilton for sponsoring our Crashing the Boards segment. All right, that'll do it tonight. Thanks so much for tuning in all Friday evening long. Been a pleasure bringing this one to you here on 95.7 The Game. Thanks, as always, to all the interactions, both on the phone lines and on the text line. Warriors next in action on Monday when they take on the Toronto Raptors north of the border. 4:30 is the tip time, which means 3:30 is the pregame here on 95.7 The Game. Until then, this is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk next time right here on 95.7 The Game.